Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning, happily birthday to you.
Thank you very much. Yes, it was my happily birthday
yesterday. That was just a mistake. I wasn't trying to Arsecast Extra-ify the word happy.
I thought we were sort of trying to coin a new catchphrase and, you know, spin out a load of merchandise, happily birthday merchandise. We could record Happily Birthday to You. That's like a parody song, put it out on YouTube. The possibilities are endless.
They really are. Did you have a good birthday? It was a landmark birthday as well. 33, which I refer to as the Jesus birthday, because if you get beyond 33... to the point where, of course, Jesus was crucified and put to death, I always feel like you've kind of achieved something. And all of us who have not been crucified in our lives, I think, feel like that.
I mean, there's still time. If anyone is going to get crucified in the modern day, it probably is going to be me for something. I think, 33 feels quite old, doesn't it? I know there are plenty of older people listening,
not
scoffing at that. Yeah. But when you think about it, I can't help but think about my age in sort of footballer's terms. And, you know, think of the way we talk about someone like Laurent Koscielny or Nacho Monreal, who are sort of in that bracket. It's very much washed up, over the hill, on their last contract. But despite all that, yes, I did have a good birthday. I was at a wedding on Saturday night, so I celebrated my birthday, you know, surrounded by all these lovely wedding guests at midnight, making it about me.
Well, of course,
as usual.
Surrounded by people who have, you know, a bigger celebration than you, but, you know, why not co-opt it?
It was my special day.
It sure was. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. And there were many kind birthday wishes on Twitter last night as well from people who thought you bore in your youth when you had the hair to die for, it has to be said. They thought you bore a striking, I'm just adding the letter L randomly to words here today.
Why not?
A striking resemblance to Matteo Guendouzi. Guendouzi, I did that one on purpose.
Yes. Well, I'll take that over Mick Hucknall, which is the other one that was doing the rounds.
Yes. Guendouzi, far, far preferable to Mick Hucknall on all kinds of levels. I mean, I don't know if Matteo Guendouzi can sing, but I would prefer to listen to him sing than Mick Hucknall. No question.
I'd have the Guendouzi album over the Hucknall album any day of the week. And I'd probably also keep Guendouzi in central midfield over Mick Hucknall. So Guendouzi wins on both counts.
He is. Isn't Mick Hucknall a big Manchester United fan also? So
he is. He is.
Another aspect to his evil.
I know. He even picked the wrong red team. What can you do?
So you've been at a wedding all weekend. I take it during the wedding festivities, you didn't slope off to watch the European Under-21 Championships or the Copa America or anything like that?
No, afraid not, nor the Women's World Cup. I've not been watching much football this weekend. I've just been sort of searching Twitter intermittently for transfer rumours. That's been about the extent of it.
Yeah, there haven't been that many either, although there is a story this morning about how we've agreed a 5-year contract with William Saliba, whose name I did not have to Google before I asked you the question. Just the small matter of agreeing terms between Arsenal and Saint-Étienne. So that seems to be the closest one. And also the Alexis Claude Maurice thing over the weekend seemed to have a bit of legs. But of course, we wait and see. We just don't know what's happening, if anything, in terms of transfers. Are you excited in any way by either of those two?
Well, my excitement about Saliba is tempered by the news that Arsenal are considering sending him back on loan to Saint-Étienne for a season. Mm. Apparently, you know, Saint-Étienne are making that a condition of any possible sale, but, you know, it sort of might be a really smart move in the long term. I can't help but think we need to fix our defence more immediately than that, you know?
Yeah, it is trying to do. I mean, everyone says, don't they, that we've got to buy these players, we've got to get these players at a young age before they become unobtainable to us in terms of what they cost, the transfer fees might cost, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, you're then buying players who might not be quite ready to do what we would like Arsenal to do. We're very much in, like, take a step back to take a step forward territory. It feels like, anyway.
Yeah, and to be honest, even if this guy did come in, he's a teenager, you know. I think we have to be realistic about how immediate his impact could be anyway. So, yeah, it feels like a smart signing, a sort of, again, Doozy-esque bit of business if it happens. But maybe one where we'll have to be a bit more patient, maybe more like the level of patience we thought we'd need for Guendouzi. He looks like a really good prospect, but, you know, it's not going to be something that dramatically changes our fortunes next season.
Well,
seems, unless you think Arsenal might not agree to this loan back.
I mean, is there the potential perhaps to, I don't know, could we sign him and loan them Mavropanos, for example?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad shout. I'd be in favour of that. And then, you know, he gets to start acclimatising to English football a little bit quicker. He gives us another option in the first team squad. And we're not shy of centre-halves we could send there. You know, there's Mavropanos, there's Christian Bielik, there's even someone like Callum Chambers, potentially. So, you know, there are a few that we could send the other way. I let's get that rumour going of a Mavropanos loan to Saint-Étienne, because that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, actually, there's a question here. I'm going to weave in some questions throughout the podcast as we do in this sort of off-season, and there isn't a great deal happening. From Liam Stokes, who said, would buying Saliba represent a good use of resources? Recruiting young talent makes sense for us in general, but given that we have Mavropanos, Chambers, Bielik, and Holding on the books, isn't central defence a bit of an exception in that regard? And when we do have, I think everybody accepts the fact that we have a limited transfer budget. If we're going to use some of that budget to buy a player who we're then going to loan back to a club, even if it is part of a long-term strategy, there is a very short-term need to ensure that our defence has less Mustafi in it next year.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't take him, could they? I mean, the problem is, he's on wages that a club like Saint-Étienne probably couldn't afford, irrespective. So, look, we need a number of defensive signings this summer. We've talked about left back. We've talked about potentially right back. We definitely need a new centre-half who can play regularly next season. If it's not going to be Saliba, it has to be somebody else. And I don't think that should preclude us doing this type of long-term deal. I mean, that's what we've been asking for from the club, a sense of long-term planning, a sense of, you know, rejuvenating the squad, an eye on the future. But it can't just be that. We also need something. We need something that can improve us more quickly.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the transfer deals that we're potentially doing and the players that we're looking at, I mean, I see a lot of sense in those deals, but at the same time, I find it a little bit difficult to marry what we need to do in the short term with this long-term planning. I don't know how quite you find the balance between the two things, but for every deal or for every player that's out there, there's kind of a but or a caveat in relation to his signing. Yes, this will be good, but we have to look after the defence for next season. What about our central midfield? You know, we could bring in this guy, but, or we're bringing in this young Brazilian, he'll be great, but he's only 18 and he's one for the future. Or the same with Alexis Claude Maurice, as Philippe Auclair was saying on the Arscast on Friday. You know, maybe not a player for this season, but in two seasons, you know, and that's great in two seasons' time, but in the very short term, there are still big issues to address.
Yeah, It almost feels like we need a kind of dual strategy. And in fairness, I think we had a bit of that last summer. You know, you look at signings like Sokratis, but paired with signings like Guendouzi and Torreira. It's almost as if there was one eye on the present and one eye on the future. That seemed to be the way Sven was going. If you even look at the previous transfer window, you've got Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan at one end of the spectrum, Mavropanos at the other. And maybe there's an extent to which the club are trying to continue that sort of duality. But the thing is, we don't really need any more players around 30. We've got far too many of them already. So I do think inevitably the signings are going to fall in that younger part. And we know, we've been down this road before, that that has risk to it. You know, it's risk that players aren't ready, risk that players don't adapt, risk that they don't fulfil the potential you project them to have. But it's a risk that I think in our position we just have to take at the moment.
Yeah, you are gambling on potential. Even if you bring in Saliba and you integrate him into the first team, you know, and we've spoken about this before, how there is a great opportunity to do that, you know, more than ever, if you are going to embark on this strategy of buying young players, to me it wouldn't make sense to loan him back. Bring him in and play him in the Europa League straight away. That's what we can do. That's the one benefit for us of being in the Europa League next season, is the ability to just give playing time to young players to sort of get a proper handle on their potential, their readiness, you know, all of that sort of stuff, and just put them into a competitive environment rather than have them at under 23s, or we talk about, you know, a loan deal. Maybe they could go on loan in the second half of the season. You know, if there is that strategy being put in place with regards to our transfer business, if you're buying an 18-year-old Saliba, bring him in and play him. Same, I mean, that's where I go with Mavropanos. We talked about him the other week. I would play him. So there is that. And then maybe you can loan players out in the second half of the season if the opportunity arises. So I don't know. Mm. We're sort of scratching around in the dark, though, aren't we? Because nothing concrete has happened in terms of transfers. So it's very hard to get a handle on what it is we're doing. We're just kind of guessing about what's going on.
No, you're right. But I think there are patterns in the types of players we're linked with, particularly in sort of the age profile, and I guess the price bracket to an extent too. I mean, you know, it does seem that there is an attempt to bring in some players sort of between 18 and 23, you know, at least to balance out the sort of ageing aspects of the squad. I mean, the problem with Saliba as an immediate improvement for the team is how many centre-halves are flourishing before the age of 20, yeah, able to cope with top-level Premier League football. It's a very select list, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, he's got to be, you know, he'd have to be brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Like the outstanding young central defender in European football to come in and do a job, yeah, straight away at that kind of age. So it is one of those things where if you are buying and you're gambling on the potential, that potential might not be realized for, you know, particularly with a central defender, it might be 3 or 4 years before you get to see him really establish himself in that position.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a sort of Rafael Varane level talent if he's going to walk into the team and flourish. And, you know, I almost wonder, you probably do have to think of it as someone who's really going to come in and improve us in sort of 2 to 3 years' time, potentially. And I wonder how the club account for that. Like, if they almost look at the transfer fee and they think, well, yes, this is technically out of this summer's budget, but it's kind of, we can sort of aggregate it, think about it as an investment over the next 10 years. Therefore, we can almost separate it as a fee and not have to worry about it in quite the same way. I do wonder about that element to it, because if the numbers we're seeing about a sort of £40 million budget are true, and half of it goes on a player who can't really play for us next season, you know, that is a concern. As much as this is an exciting prospect, that is also a concern.
It is. And then we come back to the point where we have to make our central defence better next season. simple as that. You know, we can't go into another season with a collection of defenders like we have at this moment in time, where it's just not good enough, and the team is not good enough defensively. I mean, overall, we focus, of course, on the defenders, but overall, I don't think there's enough defensive focus within this team to see any significant improvements next season unless we invest in better personnel.
No, I mean, and to be honest, I don't think there is a 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old player who can fix this defence. I think we're going to be looking at players in a different age bracket, a slightly older age bracket, as ones who can immediately improve us in that regard. But none of this is to criticise the club for implementing some sort of mid to long term transfer strategy. I think that's definitely a positive development, but you know, it just doesn't assuage the immediate need that we have. And
no,
you know, we almost can't help but think about the opening game of next season. I mean, the fixture list is out now. We know what a tough start we have. And I'm not sure any 18-year-old centre-half is going to be the thing that gets us through that tough start.
No, I don't think so. Speaking of tough starts, the fixtures came out, and listeners to the Arscast Extra will have a wry smile at our first game of the season, which is against Newcastle. Daniel Fitzpatrick on the Discord says, is there a correlation between the recent discussions about Magpies and the fact that Newcastle are Arsenal's first opponents this season? No, I think we made that happen via the universe and our talk of Magpies. In more serious terms, though, it is a tricky enough start to the new season, isn't it? Because Newcastle away, never particularly easy. We've got Burnley at home, which often is a bit easy, but we'll have to wait and see. But then Liverpool and Tottenham before the end of August and before we go into the first interlull. You could do without those games that soon in the season, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's a little bit reminiscent of last season, isn't it, when we started with two very, very difficult games. I know it's not quite as bad as that, but some very tricky early fixtures. And when you think about how we finished last season and the pressure that Unai Emery kind of came under, I think, understandably so, it could be very tricky for him. I mean, he has a lot of faith and a lot of trust that he needs to regain, and a difficult start, I think, could genuinely leave him in a slightly precarious position, potentially.
Look, I don't want to even start thinking about that at this point, because we're still in the summer and we're sort of looking at things through the worst case scenario prism. But you know, it is going to be a tricky start. I looked at the fixtures and I thought, wow, every game is tough. Every single game I look at and I think, ooh, that's a bit difficult. But that, you know, speaks to where we are and what we need to do this summer and everything else. So, you know, we could have a different approach or a different outlook on things at the start of August if and when we do some transfer business and we have a better idea of the state of the squad. But I was looking, I wrote about it in today's blog. Three of our central midfield players are away. Three of our four senior central midfield players are away on international duty this summer. Elneny at the African Cup of Nations, Lucas Torreira, who really looks like a player or looked like a player who could do with a good summer of rest and recuperation. He's at the Copa America with Uruguay, and Matteo Guendouzi is at the European Under-21 Championships with France. Granit Xhaka, of course, played until mid-June in the Nations League. So there are lots of complicating factors when you think about the start of the season, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, that's doubtless going to have some impact on us. I mean, you know, who knows if someone like Elneny will be here next season, but, you know, Xhaka, Torreira, Guendouzi, they're going to be players that Emery is relying on, really, counting on. So it would be lovely to think we could freshen up those options with an alternative in central midfield, but yeah, it's quite difficult to know who that's going to be at this point. And again, it might mean that there's opportunities for younger players too. I know some of them are travelling as well with the under-21s, but maybe that will give them an early chance to impress in the first team.
Yeah. Just on a very basic level, what we need to do this summer is quite overwhelming. you know, the squad, and you look at the squad, and I know we've talked about him, we've talked about the question marks over this player and that player, and, you know, how he could go and he could go and all that kind of stuff. But all the summer football and all the tournaments and the under 21 stuff, and the fact that the tour gets underway, the US tour gets underway in early July, and some of the players who you would expect to be on that tour and to have an opportunity to impress Unai Emery and to play some games against good opposition might not be there because they do need some rest. You know, I was talking to a guy on Twitter this morning, if I can find his name here. Just a conversation about Christian Bielik. One second. It's MZL23. And he was of the opinion that if Bielik was really determined to make it at Arsenal, he should cut short his summer holidays and make sure that he's on the tour and there to show Unai Emery what he can do. But, you know, we have to remember that players need a rest. They do need some time off and potentially could end up fatigued, injured, and blow their chance that way if they don't apply a bit of common sense or a bit of common sense isn't applied to them. You know, there has to be somebody saying, look, you know, you've played all season, you've played a summer tournament, take 3 weeks off and come back and you're a bit behind, but, you know, you can catch up. I mean, it has to work that way, surely.
You'd think so. And, you know, it looks like Shad Forsyth is going to be in a slightly new role at Arsenal next season, having been essentially promoted. And you'd have to think that part of his agenda will be making sure those players who have been at international tournaments or playing international fixtures during the summer are suitably rested and suitably prepared. And it's a real shame for Bielik because, you know, he's had a really good loan and there's a lot of talk about him coming back into the squad. If he can't make the tour, that's a shame for him. But he's got to, I think, play a slightly longer game than that. And also, you know, him being at this tournament, from what I can tell, he seems to be really impressing. He played well at the weekend in the highlights that I saw and the reports that I read. So him being there, I think, is advancing his reputation and probably improving his chances of catching Emery's eye almost as much, really, as being on that tour. I think it's really good for him to be doing what he's doing with Poland right now. So I don't think we'd want to change that. Did you see him at all play that game?
I saw a few clips during the rounds. I didn't watch the game, but I did see a few clips. Apparently he made a mistake, but he also scored a goal and was very good, excellent on the ball. I really like the way he uses the ball. I watched him a bit for Charlton towards the end of the season when the playoff games were on. And I know he's a little bit slow on the turn in central midfield, where he was playing for Charlton a lot as a holding midfield player. So that would be a little bit of a worry in Premier League terms, where the pace is a bit quicker and you don't get as much time on the ball. But taking it out from the centre of defence and the way that he distributes the ball is very impressive. I think there's something to be said as well for his size. He's fucking gigantic. He's a really big guy, and we are a team that could do with a bit more physicality, could do with a bit more height at the back. You know, we could use those assets quite well. So I'm interested to see how the rest of this tournament goes for him. And I'm also interested to see what the club's plan is for him, because, you know, he's been quite upfront, hasn't he, about what he wants next season. He does not want to come back and play under 23 football. He's got 2 years left on his contract, apparently. So we could potentially loan him out again, but I think he's at a point in his career where he wants to play regular first-team football and would be open to a move. So the club have got a bit of thinking to do, haven't they? I mean, we paid £2.5 million for this kid when he was 16 to bring him into the club in the first place. It feels like he's been with us for a long time, but he's still only 21. You know, he potentially could be one of the young players who could make a step up.
Yeah, I think he's a really interesting prospect. And, you know, when I think about the size thing and also the way he brings the ball out of the defence, he reminds me a little bit, and I don't know how flattering a comparison people will consider this, but he reminds me a bit of Harry Maguire at Leicester, who is a player, you know, Manchester United are talking about paying £60 million for or something crazy. So I think he's quite an unusual type, you know, to be that big but have that ability on that on the ball, and almost the sort of bravado on the ball that he has. You know, he does seem able to take risks and dribble. I think he looks really interesting, and surely he's someone we could say, look, you'll get cup football with us next season, you'll get the Europa League games, you'll get the League Cup games, and surely that's going to be enough to keep him. I'd like to think so.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense. It would make a lot of sense. You know, but I suppose, it, you know, we all look at it and have our own opinion on it, but from the club's point of view, we have to wait and see what kind of reports they have or how they view him. You know, what we think and what Unai Emery and his coaching staff think are different things. I mean, speaking of coaching staff, did we discuss the Freddie Ljungberg, Steve Bould job swap on last week's show? I don't think it had happened yet, had it?
No, I don't think it had. Just one last thing on Bielik.
Yeah.
You say he's got 2 years left on his deal. Well, by Raul Sinier's logic, that means a decision's got to be made, really, hasn't it? I'd be inclined to give him a new contract, kind of irrespective. So at least you've protected your investment there. Even if, you know, you are going to send him out on loan or something. If you can get him to sign a new deal.
Well, that's it. If you can get him to sign a new deal. If you can say to a player, sign a new deal without giving him assurances that he's going to be given an opportunity, I don't think that's possible. I just don't think it's possible. I think he would need to be convinced first by some regular football with Arsenal, and then we could potentially give him a new contract. But, you know, again, it's a complicated thing. So, Freddie Ljungberg and Steve Bould job swap. Freddie Ljungberg coming into Unai Emery's first team coaching setup next season, and Steve Bould going back to work with the young players, as he did with some great effect in the past. That's quite an interesting change, that, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I heard you talk about it on the regular Askcast last week. And I think this is really interesting. And I know that you have said for some time you feel like Freddie Ljungberg might be being groomed as a potential future Arsenal manager. And I just wonder if maybe our incoming technical director, Edu, might have any role in this. You know, Raul Sinier spoke about Edu's role being partly to sort of safeguard the club's footballing values and principles and have an eye on the longer-term vision for the club and the project. And let's not forget, he's someone who knows Freddie Ljungberg very well. They played together under Arsene Wenger. So maybe this slight shift in emphasis is a consequence of him coming on board and thinking, well, where will we be 5 years down the line, not just, you know, at the end of Unai Emery's current contract? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it all depends how this move came about. Whose idea was it? Was it the club's idea to make that promotion? Was it Unai Emery's idea to make the promotion? Did it come about a slightly different way, and it was something that just said, okay, we'll have, this seems all right. You know, if it is part of a long-term strategy, great, you know, because it would be nice to think that there is that kind of joined-up thinking at the club these days. I'm not 100% convinced that's exactly how it came about, but, you know, if Freddie is a coach, I think he clearly is a coach with some potential. More first team experience will be beneficial to him in the long run, whether it's at Arsenal, than it would be for Steve Bould at this point. You know, we'll wait and see just quite how involved he is by Unai Emery. That's the other thing. What specific roles will he have, or what will he be allowed to do under Emery?
Yeah, because we are guessing, but it never felt like Steve Bould was a particularly prominent member of Emery's coaching staff.
No.
And the other thing to say about this change, and I suppose the change just going out of the club, is that this could well be just Emery populating all the major roles with his guys. You know, ultimately, I know Ljungberg and Forsyth are interior appointments, but you know, Burgess was hired before Emery. Steve Bould was part of Arsene Wenger's regime. Emery's been there a year. He's got his foot under the table, and maybe he's just, you know, making his presence felt a little bit and shaping the staff accordingly. It's difficult to know whether it would be coming from him or from a sort of technical direction side. I have to say, I sort of hope it's the latter of those
two.
Yeah,
I hope so too. What did you make of the Darren Burgess sacking, which is a bit of a surprise? I mean, he was brought in by Ivan Gazidis, this much is clear, and he was brought in on a very very healthy salary for for a staff member. I feel like perhaps there was a little bit of financial trimming going on here, and I'm not sure I buy into this story that was being put out there, that there was this end of season inquest and somehow Darren Burgess was responsible for our inability to get points from games that we should have got more points from. You know, Emery was in charge for the games against Crystal Palace and Brighton and all that kind of stuff. It felt a little bit like some of the blame was being pinned on Darren Burgess when that's really not his remit. That's not his remit. I mean, he was head of high performance. He was the guy, or his department certainly was the one who told Unai Emery, Aaron Ramsey is on the brink of an injury here. Ramsey said, I want to play. Emery went with the player's wishes rather than the advice of the medical people. And Ramsey ended up, you know, getting an injury that basically ended his Arsenal career. And I think over the last couple of weeks of the season cost us quite dearly because of the way the games played and how much we could have used Aaron Ramsey, even if not in every game. So I found it all a little bit strange. There was a bit of trying to shape the narrative, perhaps.
Yeah, I found it odd. What did you make, just on a slightly adjacent point, of Unai Emery's comments about Aaron Ramsey, where, you know, Ramsey came to him and said he was fit to play and that was kind of good enough for the coach? What was your take on sort of that?
Well, I mean, did he say he was fit enough to play or that he wanted to play?
Well, maybe the latter, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you invest, as we have done, and, you know, many people wanted us to do, in the best people when it comes to fitness and conditioning and the physical condition of players and looking after them. You know, how often in the past did we hear about the red zone, the red zone, the red zone, and players in the red zone, and they end up getting injured? We wanted the club to put money into that side of things to make sure that we didn't pick up the same amount of injuries that we did in the past. So we brought in Chad Forsyth, we brought in sports scientists and nutritionists, and we brought in, you know, the stat DNA for the players to use during training, so that to the nth degree we can see how fit they are and what their physical condition is like, right? So we did that, and then the advice of those people, those experts, was ignored. So I feel like that one is on Emery for me. I mean, I understand why he would want to play Aaron Ramsey. And I understand why, when a player is coming to you and saying, no, I want to play, I'll be fine, it'll be great, I can do it, you would err with the player because you need points and you realize how important that player is to you, even if you've realized it a bit too late in the season. But it feels like he ignored solid advice and it came back to bite him in the arse.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, Ramsey was the golden goose, really, that made this Arsenal team work in the final few months of the season. And I think Emery was probably as acutely aware of our reliance on him as we were as fans, if not more so. And it did backfire, that gamble. I do understand taking that gamble. I mean, ultimately, some players, you know, play through all sorts of niggles and all sorts of problems. And maybe Emery thought Ramsey could do the same. I think anyone with a detailed knowledge of his injury history would probably know that's not the case. But yeah, the Burgess thing is really, I have to be honest, I'm sort of disappointed, because I met Darren Burgess a couple of times, and I always thought he seemed like an incredibly on it, intelligent, progressive guy who I think was doing really good work at Arsenal. I mean, look at the amount of ground we covered last season as compared to the year before. Quite a remarkable change there, yeah, in sort of the intensity of our physical performances. And, you know, as the head of performance, I think he has to be credited with that. And yet he finds himself out of a job. I suspect, like you, maybe there's an element of cost-cutting involved. It just seems... It's just, you know, in the year in which the Kroenkes have taken full control, we know we didn't make the Champions League. We know there were sort of emails sent out looking to inhibit spending where possible in other departments. You know, if we're looking at a player with, like, Mesut Ozil and saying, well, we probably can't afford that allocation of salary to him, maybe we have to also feel like that about staff and cut costs accordingly. I mean, it always seemed a bit strange to have Burgess and Forsyth working in tandem, didn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I was, when Burgess was brought in, I thought, okay, well, surely Shad Forsyth will go. There seemed to be too much overlap in terms of, you know, profile of the guys as well, you know. So look, Shad is going to take over and hopefully do a very good job, but it's just another layer of complexity to what's already a fairly complex summer and stuff that's going on behind the scenes. You know, again, I'll come back to this idea that if there is really smart, joined-up thinking going on, and these are decisions that are being made in order to reshape the club and the way that it moves forward, then great. I'm absolutely and 100% on board with that. I'm just, you know, slightly cynical. I'm not convinced. But maybe it just will take time to convince us, James.
Well, the one thing I would say is that, I mean, who knows what sort of confidentiality clauses might be in place. But Darren, you know, has not been a particularly media shy person. He's done quite a lot of interviews in the past in Australia and other places. So I do wonder if we might hear a little bit more. The other thing I would say about him is his commitment to Arsenal was always slightly split. I think he had other working commitments in Australia, and maybe they just felt like they needed someone who had absolute focus on the club. I do think that might have been a factor in how things played out, but it's definitely going to be something that's interesting to watch, and it'll be very interesting to see how Unai Emery handles his players next season in terms of their workload. You know, we've talked about the Europa League group stage, and I just feel like lessons have to be learned, really. There.
Yeah. Actually, I got a couple of interesting emails from people about Darren Burgess and his involvement in a thing called Herbalife. Have you heard of Herbalife?
That rings a bell.
It's a sort of nutrition thingy. But and Darren Burgess apparently did some events last year in Australia as a you know, using his title as Director of High Performance at Arsenal to talk about this Herbalife nutrition stuff. One of the things was tailoring your nutrition program to your specific health goals and the latest research behind breakfast and how to apply it. So there you go. I don't know. I did ask the club if his involvement with that had any bearing on the decision that was made, and they said no. So I don't know. But it'll be interesting. Maybe he'll go off to apply the latest research to breakfast, whatever that might be. I mean, what research can you do into breakfast? It's first meal of the day. Cocoa Pops versus bacon. I don't know.
Sure.
It would be interesting research, wouldn't it? I mean, imagine, like, can we get like a $2 million fund to research breakfast, and all you do is eat breakfast every day, all day, just breakfasts?
Maybe they're just trying to finally solve the butter jam conundrum that we once faced on this show.
Maybe so.
I encountered another version of that, by the way, at this wedding at the weekend. They served like a sort of afternoon tea of scones, and there was quite heated debate about jam and cream and the order in which they should be applied to a scone.
Okay, hang on a second here. There's only one way that you can do it. Surely you've got to put the jam, which I would call it a scone rather than a scone. There's another difference. Sure. We won't fall out about it, though. But you've got to put the jam first and then the cream, right?
Well, I don't do that.
But
I mean, surprise, surprise, we disagree.
You put cream. I mean, I wouldn't put cream on a scone anyway. I mean, I just wouldn't do it. That's abhorrent to me. But you would put cream and then you would put jam on the cream, or you just drip some jam into the cream? How does that work? How can you spread it properly if there's a load of cream on it?
Because it's like clotted cream, so it's sort of thicker. But also, in my mind, the cream is acting as a sort of butter surrogate. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then the jam is... Well, we've been in over this before. So I'm just saying, there's a lot of questions that need answering. And if Herbalife and Darren Burgess are the guys to do it, at least Darren Burgess has finally got the time to invest in these important matters.
Well, I look forward to the great scone, cream, jam, revelation. His dissertation on how those things should be applied in the correct order. Mm. I think we'll take a break, will we? We'll come back and do questions and more in part two.
Yes, let's do that.
Let's.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which is available to ArsBlog members on Patreon. It's a chat server. You can chat about things, but you can also ask questions for the Arscast Extra in there as well. Right, where will we start today, James? Here's one, actually, I'll start. It comes from Edie, who's at J_Ede on Twitter. He says, how concerned are you with the lack of news/rumours regarding outgoing players? I haven't read a single story about Mustafi leaving. They are a bit, you know, light, aren't they? Short on the ground, the outgoing ones. Lots of players being linked with us, but not so many players being linked away.
Short and on the ground, like Mustafi himself, I suppose. But it's almost as if the players we're trying to sell are sort of fundamentally flawed in some way, and other clubs might not be desperate to pay them what we pay them. Mm. It's incredible, isn't it?
Mm.
I am a bit worried about that, yes, because I feel like the incoming business we've done, who we can get rid of and for how much. So yes, and I suppose that to answer your question with a question, as I tend to do, Frederick Torstensson said, I know the season is almost 8 weeks away, but considering the amount of work the club has to do this summer, when is it appropriate for us to lose our collective shit? When should we start to panic if we don't start to see any players coming or going?
Now.
And
now.
3, 2, 1, unleash hell. I think not yet, because there's nothing going on full stop, really, is there, in the Premier League? It's very quiet on all fronts, as far as I can tell.
Mm, it does appear to be. I do tend, though, to not give a fuck about that, in the sense that people say, well, who else has made any signings? And I'm like, well, I don't care who else has made signings. It's about what Arsenal should be doing or need to do. So I'm not that, you know, I try not to use the entire market as some sort of a guideline for what we should be doing and when we should be doing it. I suppose there is always that domino effect, isn't there, in the transfer market, where a bit of money starts slushing around and then players, it frees up players to go here and there. And again, look, it is really early in the summer, even if the new season is approaching more quickly than we would like. So, you know, I'm not quite at the panic mode yet. Absolutely not, because, you know, it's really only a couple of weeks since we played our last game and, you know, some shit needs to settle down. But we do need to get moving sooner rather than later, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at last summer, we were largely commended for doing pretty swift, efficient business. But I think, with the exception of Lichtsteiner, maybe, I think our signings were almost all in July, and that's still a couple of weeks away, and it felt like decent time, you know, did good timing at the time. Mm. So maybe it's not quite yet the point where we should be really worried. But look, the sooner the better. The sooner the better. There's no doubt about that. Especially with the tour coming up, you really do want, if there are going to be new signings, ideally you want them to be on that, don't you?
Mm, you do. There's a question here from the Discord from Liney, which I don't particularly want to answer, but he said, "Morning, Big R's and the Gun Guns." I quite like that. That was
love
good.
That.
Yeah, Big R's and the Gun Guns. So thank you for that, Liney. The question was about, should we sell, you know, some of our better players like Aubameyang, Lacazette, Hector, to sort of refinance a rebuild? I don't think we should right at this moment in time. I think we should have a slightly different approach. And we've done a variation of that question before. But I just wanted to reference that nice intro. Have you got a question? Will I do a question?
Well, on this theme, actually, of timing, on the Discord, Mark T. Drinan asked, does the new shirt deal delay any potential transfer announcements? I've seen a lot of speculation about that. Do you reckon it has any actual say?
Does the moon have any say over our signings?
I hope so.
I hope so. Is it out? No,
I feel like it'd be better at it than the actual people we've got in the job.
No, I don't really think it has any bearing on that. This idea that we won't make any signings or announce any signings until we can parade the players in the new Adidas shirt that nobody's seen, of course. Nobody has seen these Adidas shirts, so it's top secret. We can't possibly announce a player, because that would spoil the big surprise of these new shirts that nobody has seen at all. No pictures have done the rounds anywhere. So I guess that's the answer. I don't think it has any.
Yeah.
I don't think it has any real impact. It's a kind of a thing to cling on to a bit, isn't it? Well, that must be the reason. Or we're just waiting to see if we're, you know, in the Champions League, and that's, you know, we're going to wait and see how much money we're going to spend, all that sort of stuff. I don't know. I don't really buy into it.
No, I'm not sure I give it much credence either, because, you know, it would be quite easy enough for the club to make an announcement now saying, we've reached agreement for the transfer of X player, but then release the publicity shots and all that, you know, later. I think we just haven't done a deal yet, and unfortunately that's the way it is.
Okay, we've got to do this one. It comes from Nick John, who's at Nick John. He says, what's your predictions for the summer's net spend and the gross spend? We've got to do it. Just pick a figure. Pick a figure for, I'm not going to ask you how many players or anything like that. Pick a figure for how much money we're actually going to spend and how much money we're going to get in for players. And then we'll get our figures and see what we can do.
Okay. I'm going to say we're going to spend 69 million.
69 million pounds.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then I think we'll get 26 million pounds.
26 million. So that gives a net spend of 43 million pounds. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to say we'll spend 51 million pounds and we'll get in 22 million. which would give us a net spend of what? 29 million.
Ugh.
I'm not expecting a lot, am I?
No. People would be furious if that's the case, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
They won't be happy with Stanley.
Okay, 43
okay, well, we'll
for James.
We go with that.
And 29 for Andrew, and we'll see where we go. I obviously hope we're both miles wrong. I hope we're wronger than wrong, wronger than we've ever been, wronger than you are about putting cream on a scone before jam. I hope we're wronger than that. Here's an interesting one while I have it here. It's not really Arsenal related, but we're going to fly through questions. Tom Childs says, where do you stand on Dortmund's stance against season ticket holders? And do you think Arsenal should adopt a similar approach? And I was like, what's that? And he said they cancelled 500 season tickets of fans that didn't attend at least seven of their 17 home games.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? I mean, the only thing about that, and I do see the point, and I see how it could improve things in terms of actually having as many fans in the ground as we purport to have, is there the demand for us to be robbing people of these season tickets, you know, taking them off? Can we easily shift them and get that revenue in? I just don't know anymore. You know, it's a long time since the waiting list was 10 years long, and, you know, if you wanted a season ticket, they were like gold dust. It doesn't quite feel, with the improved capacity and with the decline in the team's fortunes, it doesn't feel like that's the case anymore. So I don't think the club are going to take season tickets off people unless they're absolutely certain they can sell them elsewhere.
Yeah, are they even allowed to? Would they be legally allowed to refuse to renew somebody's season ticket? Like, what if you're in hospital for 6 months?
True.
I mean, do you have to provide, like, doctor's notes to say, well, this is why I wasn't there? And also, I mean, much as people might not like it, if you pay for a season ticket, you're entirely within your rights to either go or not go. You don't have a responsibility to go. I mean, you should. And if you can't, try and, you know, get your ticket to somebody else. And maybe the club could look at ways in which ticket exchange and those kind of things could be improved and made more efficient. But there's nothing to say you have to attend, is there, in the terms and conditions? I mean, you've just done your season ticket renewal. Did you read the small print?
Yep.
Does it say, James, you must attend at least 50% of these games or we will have you flogged and we'll remove your ticket?
I don't think it does. I mean, I only looked at one thing, really, and that was the big number, and then I wept a bit, and then I paid it. But I think I think, in fairness to the club, the ticket exchange system they have is pretty effective, you know. I, as a season ticket holder, find it really useful and really efficient. I mean, it works pretty smoothly. So really, I think the issue is people who can't get to season ticket games, who hold season tickets, not reselling and leaving those seats empty. But, you know, if they're doing that, they're only really hurting themselves because, you know, they're costing themselves money. They could recoup some money there. Maybe I can't see this being enforceable. I don't know how Dortmund have managed to do it, and I imagine it's contingent on them having a lot of demand. And I'm not sure. I mean, I'd venture that their season tickets are a lot cheaper than ours.
Yes.
And so I suspect they have more fans with the sort of economic capability to take up those season tickets. Being an Arsenal season ticket holder is an incredibly expensive affair, and I'm not sure the queue is a mile long. I know people in other parts of the world might find that hard to believe. I know when I say I renew my season ticket, there's always comments underneath saying, I wish I could be a season ticket holder, but I live too far away. But, you know, it's a significant expense. It's a significant chunk of most people's earnings. So I'm not sure how long the queue is right now.
I just had a look to see how much a Borussia Dortmund season ticket is. And according to a website called Statista, it starts at €215. So that's
so
for standing. And then 400 for the cheapest category of seats. So, there is a marked difference.
Yeah, I mean, you can pay £120, can't you, for a seat at an Arsenal game, if it's a top-tier game, I think. So, yeah, you're well on your way to a standing Dortmund season ticket at that point.
Yeah. All right. Your question?
My question, well, actually, we had this question come in just now from Carsten Eskelund on Twitter, and Carsten says, what will you discuss the most today? Hashtag Sarri out or Magpies? And we haven't really discussed either.
We haven't. I believe you do have some...
I have got a Magpie fact.
Okay, well, that's fine. We'll wait, but...
Are you sure?
Yeah, we'll wait.
I could do it now.
No.
Okay.
No, let's wait. I'm absolutely prepared. Exactly. Just having a quick look at the Sarri out hashtag. Is there anything here on Twitter?
I imagine it's more gleeful celebration, isn't it? I mean, it is interesting. You know, we're talking about what we've done this summer or not done. Chelsea have lost their manager and sold their best player, so... I'm enjoying their summer to this point.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy for them to appoint Frank Lampard as well. That's, you know, it's a real gamble, it seems to me, and a risk I'm content to see them take.
Well, unfortunately, Prabhav Bala on Twitter, who appears to be a Chelsea fan, is not on board with the Lampard appointment, replying to somebody saying, "You absolutely drunk idiot. Go and support Lampard when he drags us to 10th place. And while you are Sarri out when he has won us a trophy, taken us to a cup final and finished in the top four in the Premier League, such toxic fans like you would never learn about football and just rant." So there you go. There's a little bit of Sarri out.
A fond farewell to the Sarri out hashtag that's given us a lot of joy pretty much right up until the Europa League final, at which point all that joy evaporated.
Completely and utterly in a disgraceful Arsenal performance, but there you go. Yeah, I suppose that is the there is a marked difference between the two clubs, or the way that the two clubs are run, particularly when it comes to managers. I've got a question here for you. We're going to have to talk about it at some point because it was something that really struck me during the week when we heard from Mesut Ozil, but I guess from the Mesut Ozil camp via Raphael Honigstein, who does have a fairly strong connection with that particular camp, if you like. And he was speaking on the Sky Sports podcast and basically saying Ozil has no intention of going anywhere this summer. He won't go on loan. That doesn't suit him. He's not going to China. He's not going to Turkey. And Maka, who's at Arsenio1 on Twitter, says, "How concerned are you by the comments from Ozil's camp about him going nowhere? I personally feel very strongly that despite his undoubted talent in the past, the player now seriously handicaps us both on and off the field." And the other thing to mention in that message from the that Honigstein was putting out was basically that Ozil would be happy enough to wait it out and see if Emery got sacked and a new man might make life better and happier for him. That's not great, is it?
It's not great. And I have to say that let's say Emery doesn't achieve what he's intending to this season and he goes at the end of the forthcoming campaign. Well, at that point, Mesut Ozil will still be here. He'll still be under contract, but he'll be almost 32.
With only a year left on his contract.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of feel like it's not a situation where you can really see the club, you know, giving him a new deal necessarily. Or, you know, if he waits, I'm not sure quite what he's waiting for. If he has anything left of his prime, it's now. And surely he should want to go and play for a club and for a coach where he feels he can make the most of his talents. This feels like it's become about the money, and it's his right. You know, just as it's the right of a season ticket holder to not turn up if they don't want to, it's his right to continue to take that money on that contract. But it's an uncomfortable position and a very awkward one, I think, for the club.
Yeah, it is a bad situation for Arsenal. That's, you know, my thinking on it now is that the whole situation is just really bad for Arsenal. And whichever side of the fence you're on, whether you're on the Ozil side of the fence, whether you're on the Emery side of the fence, whether you think Emery's done things the right way with Ozil or the wrong way, if you feel that Ozil has behaved perfectly within his rights, or it's somehow Emery's fault that Ozil's decline is as sharp as it is, whatever you feel about that, the bottom line is it shit for Arsenal? Terrible. Mm. There's a problem between the coach and the star player, an incompatibility of personality, an incompatibility in terms of football. You have a player who's saying, well, okay, I'm not going anywhere, and I'll actually sit here and wait for this coach that I don't like to get sacked. That's terrible. That's just really horrible for Arsenal. And the fact that the head coach can't deal with it or can't get on top of it, that's also terrible for Arsenal. And somebody above Emery and somebody above Ozil has got to make the decision on this and do it. There's got to be a kind of a ruthlessness with this decision, because it's a festering boil on the arse of Arsenal, and it's spreading, and nobody needs that. Because then stuff starts to come out and ooze down your leg, and it's all very, very unpleasant. And that's where we are with this.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds it. I hope you can get that scene to Andrew as soon as possible.
You can get some creams, but I believe.
I think you also have to remember, in the case of Ozil, you know, he's not being linked with a move anywhere, but where do transfer stories normally emanate from, if not boils on the bum? And it's from the boils on the bum football agents. And in this case, it's not necessarily in the agent's interest for those stories to be out there. They are happy to stay. It's not like they're agitating for a move. So, you know, maybe that explains why it's all very quiet. But yes, I would like to see the club and the player reach some sort of compromise that enabled him to move on. You know, there have been enough question marks about Ozil's commitment. When you throw in the prospect that he would quite like the manager to be sacked, I think those questions become all the more alarming and pronounced. It's just unhealthy. It's just unhealthy. Yeah. And I think, you know, even if you are someone who really believes in the talent of Mesut Ozil and really believes that Unai Emery is, you know, a fraud, as some fans might label him, this is not a good long-term plan for the club any way you slice it. Like I say, even if Emery is gone by the end of next season, you've got an ageing player there who you can't build your team around, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just don't see the point in keeping him at this point. I think we need to try and cut our losses.
This is an Arsenal problem that Arsenal have to solve. And we need to see some mettle from the people who are running the football club in terms of how they deal with it. Simple as that. Just simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know this is sort of becoming the drum that I'm beating across the summer, but I really am pinning a lot of hopes on Edu filling what I feel is like an executive gap. And I was thinking about this because I was listening to the Arsenal Vision podcast, and they were chatting about the comments from Cohen Bramall and Bielik about feeling, I don't know if you saw this, but feeling like, you know, if Arsene Wenger was in charge, I think I'd have a clear idea of what my future was. I haven't had that much communication necessarily from Emery or from the club. And I was listening to that and reading those quotes and thinking, surely that's exactly the sort of thing that Edu is going to be charged with, you know, setting out plans for young players, working with Per Mertesacker, working with Unai Emery, but taking a bit of a longer view and dealing with these club assets. And I feel bad almost how much expectation I'm loading on him, but there is a massive vacuum, I think. You know, Raul Senyehi, when I think about what's happened since he kind of took charge of Football Matters, the more I think about it, the more I think he's just not really a technical director. You know, ultimately, it came to the January transfer window, and the way we conducted ourselves, he didn't look like a guy who really knew how to do those deals. Like, maybe he knows how to dot the T's that would be wrong. Yeah, maybe he is dotting the T's and crossing the I's. But I just felt like we lacked someone so badly in that period. And it's the same in dealing with the young players. It's the same in dealing with contracts. It's the same in dealing with moving players on. Someone's got to do that 33% of the job that Arsene Wenger did for so long.
Yeah.
And I'm crossing my fingers that it's going to be Edu.
Yeah, it's your question, but I just want to read a little quote here from Cohen Bramall. I think this was quite telling as well. He was talking about when Unai Emery came in. He said, straight away, I knew things were going to be difficult for me after that. When Arsene was there and I was with the first team, I didn't feel a lot of pressure and didn't put unnecessary pressure on myself. I felt really comfortable and that I was fitting in nicely. And, you know, on the one hand, that's classic Wenger, isn't it? You know, he's not going to put a lot of pressure on players, and he wants, you know, he wants the environment to be as nice as possible so they can feel as good as possible and therefore they can reach their potential that way. But this idea that when you don't feel any real pressure, you don't feel a lot of pressure at top level sport, I don't think you can really exist like that. And that's probably why his Arsenal career is over. To an extent. I mean, I don't know that he was ever good enough to be an Arsenal player. It's a weird, strange sort of story, isn't it? What happened to him and the way that he was brought to the club. And hopefully he can go off and have a good career somewhere. But, you know, you do need pressure as a footballer to develop and to reach your potential. And maybe it just, you know, that particular quote speaks to the environment that has existed or did exist at Arsenal under Arsene Wenger, where the players didn't feel enough pressure to perform. And that was evident in some of the games that we saw and the performances that we put in.
Yeah, I think there are two sides to it, aren't there? You know, there's the player feeling valued, but then the danger of a sort of comfort zone around that. And we've experienced both sides of that. These couple of questions are from the Discord from Dazzy Pepper. And Dazzy says, first of all, will you be covering hashtag Lampard out when it inevitably begins? Absolutely. I can't imagine anything. We might be doing our own special podcast just on that. Can't wait for it. And then Dazzy says, given the number of listeners and readers you two enjoy, it would stand to reason that some would try to hoodwink you with bullshit rumours and nonsense transfer stories. What's the biggest load of shit that someone has tried to peddle to you? Can you think of anything in particular?
I might
offer one while you have a think.
Okay,
this, I think enough time has passed that I can talk about this now. But it's an interesting insight into how things work. So when I used to write more regularly for Gunner Blog, I used to do bits of sort of transfer digging here and there, as you do. And on one occasion, an agent who was representing Gary Medel, and this was in the early days of Gary Medel. I think he was possibly still in South America at the time. It was pre-Sevilla, pre-Europe. Approached me and sort of said, listen, could you write a story saying that Arsenal were interested in Gary Medel? And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, well, it would just be really good for the profile of my player in Europe if you could say that Arsenal wanted to buy Gary Medel. And right. I was like, why would I do this? And they're like, well, it might mean in future, you know, I'm able to actually give you some proper exclusives and things like that. But it would really sort of help me out, do me a favour. And, you know, I didn't, but he ended up getting the move to Europe anyway and did play in England. I think, did he briefly, Gary Medel, maybe on loan? Not sure.
Cardiff or something like that? I don't know.
Something like that. Something like that. But there you go. So that's a story which is an example of why you should take everything you read in this window with a slight pinch of salt.
I do get bits of information from people, obviously, and sometimes you do get an email out of the blue with some stuff in it. But I don't think that anybody's ever tried to hoodwink me in terms of transfer stories or transfer news or anything like that. I think in the very early days of Arsblog, maybe the first year it was going, which is back in 2002, I put up a fake letter. It was like a fake fax that Barcelona had sent Arsenal, or Arsenal had sent Barcelona, I can't remember which, over the transfer of Patrick Kluivert. And for some reason, that got picked up all over the place and it spawned a lot of rumors. So, apologies about that one. But that was just nonsense, which you don't really expect people to take seriously. But, you know, you do have to take information that you're given, particularly when someone emails you out of the blue or contacts you the way people do these days. You know, it's not just email. People will get in touch via various channels and platforms. You kind of have to take it with a pinch of salt, particularly when it comes to transfers. There's other information that informs what you say or what you write or what you think about certain things that you know comes from a good place. But people don't just randomly email and say, hey, Arsenal, a mate of mine knows this guy down at the training ground. People can leave that sort of shit to the fuckwits who pretend to be horses on Twitter, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those kind of...
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean. Yeah. That's absolutely fair enough.
That is fair enough. Did you say you had another question from the Discord, or was that the second question?
No, that was all... They were all Daz's questions, I believe, yeah.
Okay. I know we're a little bit tight for time this morning, so I want to get through just one more before we do it here, but I can't remember where the question is. One second. AZ, who's at AZ1MS, is impressed by your curly hair. Could you discuss this, please? There could be a chance of free laser hair treatment from a clinic that might sponsor you. Is there a laser hair clinic that could get back what you lost, James? I'm not sure.
I don't think they could quite get that back. I mean, it did happen, didn't it, to
Wayne Rooney?
Bearded Genius. Well, Bearded Genius on Twitter. Do you remember this?
Oh, did he get
he got a free hair transplant.
Right.
Yeah.
Just by talking about it.
He said, I think he tweeted them fairly regularly saying, please can I have a free hair transplant? Please can I have a free hair transplant? And eventually they said, if you get X thousand retweets, you can. And he did. And
wow.
They did.
But how is how's his hair now? Is it good?
Or? I don't know, actually. I don't know. I think I sort of kept abreast with it. You know, I sort of have a passing eye. I mean, I'm not sure I can quite face the surgery. I just think bring back wigs. You know, Elton John, he's still rocking wigs and he's getting away with it. I mean, everyone knows it's bullshit, but, you know, people aren't asking him about it anymore. I think normalize the wig. Take the stigma out of wig.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what we need to do.
I mean, the glory of wigs is you could have a different hairstyle every day of the week. You could be bald one day.
Exactly.
You could be a hippie. You could be a curly 1970s footballer. You could have, you know, a dark bob like the lead singer of Swing Out Sister. The possibilities are endless. Why don't people use wigs more? Just for the crack, just for the laugh. Like, imagine every day of the week going in with a different hairstyle. I mean, remember when you were in school and you got a haircut and people would was this the custom in your school? Because it certainly was when I was in school, that when you got a haircut, people would punch you. Oh, look at you, you got a haircut, and you get like a punch in the arm. I never quite understood what that was about. That was maybe an Irish thing, but...
Did it matter if it was a good haircut or a bad haircut?
Nobody had a good haircut at fucking 14 years of age when you come into school. You didn't have good haircuts. Certainly not back in the 1980s either. There wasn't the same emphasis on hairstyling back then as there is now. But I tend to agree. I think more wigs.
Certainly some of the haircuts I had deserved to be punched as soon as they were administered.
I'll tell you what we'll do, James. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make an absolute commitment to this on this podcast.
Go on.
Next time we do a live show, we'll both wear a wig of some description.
Great.
Yeah?
Do you remember when we did the live show when Unai Emery was appointed?
Yes.
I had bought a Mikel Arteta wig, especially for the occasion. And was like waiting to put it on excitedly. I think at half time I was like, oh, this is when I'm going to bring out the Arteta wig. And just at that point, someone blurted out from the crowd that Unai Emery had been appointed Arsenal manager.
Yeah, David Ornstein had dropped the news. David Ornstein ruined your Arteta wig. Thanks, David.
I know.
Thank you.
I need to go back and get a draft.
Okay, very quick one, because we have got... you've got to go, and we also need to do the important magpie facts. Basically, final one from Mike at Chal Mike, Chal underscore Mike. If you could go on summer holiday with one of the current squad, who would it be, and where would you go?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if he's still under contract, technically, Danny Welbeck's having a lovely summer holiday, from what I can tell from Instagram.
Is he? Where is he?
Beautiful. I don't know. It's just pristine blue.
He probably isn't putting it out there, actually, quite sensibly.
Yeah.
He's not saying where he is.
He doesn't want me to go with him, is the issue.
Yeah.
Who would I go on holiday with? I'd want to go with Aubameyang, I think.
He
seems like a very chilled out, fun guy. Mm. Yeah. Ideally with Aubameyang and Lacazette. Just to be part of that bromance would be beautiful.
Okay. Very good.
What about you?
I would go to Siberia with Mustafi.
And leave him there.
Correct. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that would be a good one. No, I agree. I think, you know, Hector would be a good guy to hang out with as well, wouldn't he? Hector Bellerin seems like he could be fun. Aubameyang, there would be good laughs with Aubameyang, with the Aubameyang camp. Wherever they might be. Carl Jenkinson, probably a bit of a lad as well.
Yeah.
I enjoy listening to Carl Jenkinson every time I see him do a video. He's a funny guy. I still think, you know, one of those videos where they got the players to ask each other questions. There's one with Oxlade-Chamberlain and Jenkinson, which is just hilarious. Which I watch from time to time. Okay, time is pressing. It is... time for, hang on.
Magpies, magpies in your garden. Watch out, they'll peck out your eyes. Magpies, flying in the sky, black and white, and conducting evil. Magpies, magpie facts.
So, hit
lovely.
Me.
Hit Thank me. You so much for more like that. Okay, so my magpie fact this week is that, right, my wife does this thing whenever she sees a magpie, and someone tweeted in saying their wife does the same.
Yes, I saw this.
If she sees a magpie, she has to say, good morning, Mr. Magpie, how's your wife and family? And she does it absolutely religiously, I mean, but she sort of does it sort of under her breath, so she thinks I don't hear her doing it. So we'll just be driving along, and she'll go, good morning, Mr. Magpie, how's your wife and family? Have you ever encountered this superstition?
I have heard of people doing something like that, yeah. Because it's
one
for sorrow, two for joy. So if you see a single magpie, I don't know what the Irish equivalent of that is, but there is one, and I know people do it.
Three for a tiger, four for eternal damnation, five for a hurricane is coming,
six, and they're in your house eating all your dry goods.
Seven, you turn into a magpie.
That would make eight.
That's the old folks.
That would make eight.
Oh, that would make eight, and then it's getting over. But the thing is, I've always thought Mr. Magpie got a wife and family? How do they know that Mr. Magpie's not just a bachelor? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A single man. Who knows? Well, it transpires, and this is the true magpie fact, that magpies do mate for life. So if he's a heterosexual magpie, the chances that he has a wife and family are at least substantial.
Well, you know, we have a magpie family in our back garden. This is where all this began. They've got three little kids.
How are they getting on?
It's been quieter. I don't want to tempt fate here, but it's been quieter of late than it has been, which is good. There's more sleep being had, less barking being done. Yeah. So... maybe
the magpies are lying low.
Yeah, the magpies are just taking it easy. Maybe the young birds have grown out of their teenage phase, and they're now maturing nicely and are responsible members of the magpie society. Maybe that's what it is.
Imagine if when we go to Newcastle on the opening day of next season, all the magpies of the northeast of England are just on the roof of the stadium staring down at the pitch. Ooh. That would be terrifying, wouldn't it?
It would be. Hitchcockian.
Or if when the teams run out, we run out, you know, our depleted team, Mustafi's still playing. And
Captain,
then instead of
Captain
11
Mustafi.
Newcastle players, Captain Mustafi, if we've got one captain next year and it's him. And then instead of the Newcastle players running out alongside, it's 11 magpies flying out of the tunnel.
Ooh. Oh, no, thank you.
I don't think I could handle it.
No, I don't think I could.
Too flappy.
Exactly. Anyway, look, I'm going to leave you there. Actually, I just want to mention one thing here from Discord from StartMany, who says, good morning. As we already started to go through the odd habits of James on the podcast, I'm not sure. Did we start? I don't know what's happened there, but maybe we did and I've forgotten.
I'm not sure we've ever stopped.
He says, I feel obliged to mention the clicking sounds he makes to extend his thinking time during a tricky question. So that's your equivalent of the bump, 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 I guess.
So is it like, does he mean clicking like, if is it like, or is it more like,
No, I think it's more the like the,
That.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, when
Or does he mean I'm actually just clicking, like, just clicking into the microphone?
Yeah.
I've hurt myself.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Anyway, what he wanted to say was, they remind me of that creepy girl in Hereditary. You seen that movie?
Oh, thanks.
Well, what a day. Mateo Guendouzi.
Watch Hereditary. It looks too scary.
Too scary. Are you not a fan of scary movies? Can't do it?
I get too scared. Okay. I get too scared. Hereditary looks like the most frightening sort of thing, you know, for me. I don't know if I could hack it. Have you seen it?
I have, yeah. I can't. Yeah, scary? I think maybe, probably. But, you know, I forget movies very, very quickly. You know, I see a movie and then it's like, did I see that? Oh, I don't remember what happened in that. So, anyway, listen, I think we better stop there before we start talking about Avengers or one of those things again and people give us grief. James, thank you for taking the time out from your holiday retreat to be with us on the Arscast Extra today. We will have a podcast for you on Friday, of course, and watch out for some stuff on Patreon this week as well, patreon.com/arsblog. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.